American personnel on a Air Force base in the continental United States, apparently working on a hovering, large, black, triangular craft. There are people who purport that they have direct knowledge of retrieved non-human technology and crash retrievals. And the only question in my mind, my friend, is whether the Congress is actually going to do something about it. We have first-hand evidence from direct witnesses who are saying things that corroborate aspects of the crash retrieval reverse engineering program. And we want this investigated. We want this rigorously investigated by the Congress.
I mean, that's pretty astonishing. Have you said that before?
No. No. You're the first. See, I always save something for you, Jay.
Always save me a little something. No, seriously though, Ross, that's nuts.
So how am I? I'm optimistic, because if this can be forced into the open, if it's true, then it could change the world. It could remove the reasons for a lot of wars, and maybe it might start us thinking about of ourselves as humans rather than different nationalities.
Have you ever wondered if your company is maximizing the return of your data investment? Are you collecting the right data required to make informed decisions? Is there more that can be learned from our data? Coeus Institute can answer these questions and help you discover the hidden value within your data sets by utilizing a well-rounded approach to data analysis. Stop leaving value behind and start increasing the return on your data investment. The next generation of data analysis has begun. We are pioneers in pattern discovery. We are Coeus Institute.
Good afternoon, good morning. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good evening to you, Ross, and a good morning to me. I'm doing all right, mate. I'm wide-eyed. I've had two coffees already, so I'm...
I'm sorry to get you out of bed early. I know you're a late riser.
Don't apologize for anything, Ross. I'm always happy to jump on with you, but it is true that I am a notoriously late sleeper and not that much of an early riser. But no, I'm good, man. I woke up at like 8 o'clock and slapped myself awake and got some coffee down me. So I'm sorry about the wait. I didn't realize you were in the lobby.
No, it's fine. I don't know what was going on. I just came on the new Zoom link and it worked a lot better.
To kick this off, I met up with a friend recently who had never been to Nottingham, so I took him to this great pub called Ye Old Trip to Jerusalem. It's the oldest pub in England, apparently. Brilliant place for a drink. And we were sitting out in the beer garden, and we've been there for hours. And he was very interested in this subject, so we were talking back and forth about all of the different things that we're interested in regards to the coverage and the disclosure and what the government's doing. And then just as we were about to leave, these two guys next to us are like, What are you two talking about? What are you on about? We've just been listening quietly and like, you know, so we sat down again and they bought us another pint. And we were like, right, you know, start talking. Gave them the whole kind of spiel that I'm used to, you know, and saying, oh, in 2017, the New York Times and all this. They'd never heard any of it. Didn't know about David Grush, never heard of Lou Elizondo, yeah. Nobody. And it's funny because even though I'm kind of used to it now, it still shocks me when someone hasn't even heard a lick, not even a single lick. Mm. And like, what is with that, Ross? Why is this getting such little coverage?
My friend, I do not know. I mean, I'm not a believer in conspiracy theories. I think it's just the residual stigma. It really is just the stigma of years and years of taboos touching the subject. It's amazing. I mean, you really would have thought that to have not only David Grush coming out and saying what he's saying, okay, you can immediately say about him, okay, he's no first person witness. But even then, the thing about David Grush is that for people who actually bother to do the homework and understand the significance of him getting to Congress in the first place, he's gone through the process of the intelligence community inspector general reviewing his evidence before it was referred to Congress. And so that's why it matters, because the ICIG, who's very highly cleared, you know, can supposedly look at any of the multiplicity of different US intelligence agencies, that ICIG has done an exhaustive investigation.
And that's the intelligence community inspector general, right? For those who don't know what that means. Yeah.
And so with Grush, he went to the inspector general and basically said, I have been hindered in my ability to properly investigate allegations that there is a concealed UAP crash retrieval program. And as soon as you say this, you know, you immediately get a plethora of people on social media who say, yes, but David Grush's reprisal complaint was only about the reprisals that he faced. It wasn't about the allegations of the veracity of whether or not there is a crash retrieval program or reverse engineering program. And I've double checked this. It was. And so what the Inspector General did, and it's sitting in the files of the ICIG right now, was not only call Grush, where Grush gave the ICIG the names of people running the program, the locations of where the program is being run, the secret facilities, the code names used to conceal the program within waived, unacknowledged, illegally concealed, probably criminally concealed special access programs. And then the really important point, the point that frankly so many people keep on missing, is that the Inspector General then went on and called witnesses. And so they actually did their own proactive investigation. And so a lot of people have had a go at me in the last few weeks since I said that the ICIG's investigation is largely being ignored and that I'm pessimistic that Congress is going to do any kind of serious investigation. And what they've said, and it's been misinterpreted by one scallywag to suggest that I've got doubts about the evidence. And the hilarious thing is, I actually have no doubts about the evidence. I'm very strong. I've never had, as a journalist before, so many people telling me solid things that make me feel that there really is something to this. Corroborative witnesses. And the unique thing for me with Grush was that before I met David Grush, I've never told you this. When I told you about Nat Kobitz, the former Director of Research and Development for the US Navy, I held back on the fact that Nat introduced me to people who were in the legacy program, people who were essentially allegedly still working, according to their account, inside the program. And these people told me that it's real. And more importantly, they started talking to me about a person called David Grush, who was from the UAP task force and who was aggressively, proactively investigating this issue. And eventually I got into touch with David Grush, and it was amazing because I've never confirmed this with him directly, but I suspect some of the same people that he came across, I've come across, and there are good people who purport, and I say this is still an allegation, it's still to be verified. Yes, the evidence still needs to be tested, but there are people who purport that they have direct knowledge of retrieved non-human technology and crash retrievals. And the only question in my mind, my friend, is whether the Congress is actually going to do something about it. Is it really going to make the effort that we all hope it will, sticking their necks out? Will senators and representatives take the risk? And I was a bit pessimistic a couple of weeks ago, and I did an interview with Theories of Everything, Kurt Jaimangor, and I basically said, look, I am very, very pessimistic. And then Senator Marco Rubio came out, and let's give this guy a gold star, whatever you think of his politics. Wow. You know, he basically said it like it is. And the thing that is absolutely essential for people to understand, and again, it seems to be being lost on the scallywags who are determined to pull David Grush down before he gets a chance to actually finally give his evidence. The scallywags asserted, there's no evidence, there's no evidence. And here's Senator Marco Rubio saying, well, actually, funny you should say that. we have firsthand evidence from direct witnesses who are saying things that corroborate aspects of the crash retrieval reverse engineering program. And we want this investigated. We want this rigorously investigated by the Congress. And that's what's so exciting at the moment, is we've had this turning point where not only Marco Rubio, but Senator Gillibrand on the other side of politics, and then in the House, you've got Mike Gallagher and also Tim Burchett. And you've got other people basically coming forward and saying, yep, we want investigations. And at the moment, I think you've got the House Armed Services Committee, the Oversight Committee, the Senate Select Committee for Intelligence. There's some pretty heavy-duty committees. The only one that's glaringly absent is the House Permanent Select Committee for Intelligence, which I think is presided over by a guy called Turner. And I think people should look at his constituency to understand why he might be a bit restrained.
Oh, go on then. What's that?
He's largely beholden, I think, to the intelligence and defense community. You know, I mean, one of the problems, the realities for representatives is that they are very constrained in what they can do and what they can say in the Congress by who pays their campaign donations. You know, it's a grim reality.
The military-industrial complex are some powerful lobbyists.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, I think we're up against, if, and again, I preface this by saying, if these allegations made by David Grush are true, all he wants is for the opportunity for them to be tested. And the really interesting thing is, you know, we're now well over a month since David Grush went public with his allegations. Where's the Defense Department?
Right.
Has it made any comment at all about Mr. Grush's credibility as a witness? Not a jot.
Nope.
And it's funny because, I mean, I'm waiting for some kind of denigratory attack to be launched against him, and so is he, because that's how these people operate. You know, they try and find an attack point and they criticize. And I haven't seen it yet. Waiting for it to happen. But the interesting thing is what he wants is to be tested. Mm. And as I've said repeatedly, he's given evidence under oath, Jay.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he's actually perjured himself if he's lied. So he knows if he's lied, he's going to jail. And believe me, the politics is pretty strong in the Congress. So, you know, if he has lied, if it can be demonstrated he's intentionally lied to a congressional committee, then I'm sure that will be an issue. But I'm waiting for that to happen. And the interesting thing is, because I know from other corroborative sources, as well as the sources that Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal cited in their story, there's some pretty solid evidence backing what Mr. Grush is saying. And what are people frightened of? If the Defense Department has nothing to hide, it's got nothing to fear, bring it on. Allow them to testify. Let's put it before a Senate committee or a congressional committee and give him the security clearance. And this is really important. Give him the waiver on his security clearances to allow him to speak about what he knows. And I think people will be very interested. But when the bleaters say, oh, there is no evidence, there is no evidence, you know, David Grush is only repeating hearsay.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, the Inspector General has asserted to the Congress, in order to forward it to the Congress, he has made the finding based on his own independent investigations that Mr. Grush's allegations are credible and urgent. And, you know, I think there's a whole series of reasons why, you know, we're a very interesting moment in history right now where we're waiting to see what happens next. You know, will these oversight committees in the Congress, will they allow witnesses to come forward and give evidence?
So are you feeling a little bit more optimistic than you were a few weeks ago?
I am, because I've got a heads up that, look, one of my sources actually told me today, I'll read you what they said. when I asked them, I said, you know, what's going on? Give me some reason for optimism. And they said, please let folks know the Congress is doing everything we can to increase transparency. As we learn things with confidence, we're trying to convey it and making a conscious and controversial decision to do it publicly. We have an entire classified annex of guidance that no one ever sees. If we weren't pushing to make the public aware, the language would be there. These incredibly highly classified issues don't easily lend themselves to detailed disclosure. But I'm confident now that members are committed to doing everything they can. And another source said, they gave me a heads up, that the Senate Armed Services Committee is sponsoring exactly the same language. So it's not just House committees now. It's not just the House Armed Services Committee and the House Oversight Committee. It's now going to be, apparently mid-next week, the Senate Armed Services Committee will be sponsoring the exact same language, pushing for UAP transparency, you know, the Gallagher-sponsored amendment on the House side. So you'll have three committees publicly concerned about industry involvement in crash retrieval. That's historical and groundbreaking. You've got the most powerful authorization committees in Congress, minus the HPSI, the House Permanent Select Committee for Intelligence, sponsoring the exact same language. The SSCI, that's the Senate Select Committee for Intelligence, the Senate Armed Services Committee, and the House Armed Services Committee. And I guess another one that we should possibly name is the Oversight Committee, if Tim Burchett gets his go with them. And what he's talking about is, in part, the amendment that Mr. Gallagher has put up, which is essentially saying no funds authorized to be appropriated by the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 24 may be obligated or expended directly or indirectly, in part or in whole, to conduct or support any activity relating to unidentified anomalous phenomena that is controlled under a classified program that has not been formally, officially, explicitly, and specifically described, explained, and justified to the appropriate congressional committees, congressional leadership. It's pretty amazing, this stuff. And I mean, I've forgotten where it is, but, you know, Douglas Dean Johnson's written it up the best, where he writes about how the new Senate intelligence bill that Kirsten Gallagher is pushing, it gives holders of non-Earth origin or exotic UAP material 6 months to make it available to the all-domain anomaly resolution office.
Yeah, but Ross, doesn't that just give them 6 months or more to hide their shit?
Okay. People are going to question what I'm about to say. What if some of that shit is so big it can't be moved?
Is that what you're saying, Ross? Is that what you've been told?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
How big is big?
Big. So big, they built a building over it. In a country outside of the United States of America. I know that sounds preposterous, and I know, oh my God, you can just hear them now, the bleating debunkers. Let's see this investigated. Let's just see what happens. Let's test these allegations before the Congress. It's very, very easy for people to go, oh, there's no evidence. Oh, my goodness me. Let's just go away and ignore it. Let's test it. We haven't even got there yet. Mm. You know, there's a whole cadre of supposed experts on social media who are saying it can't be, therefore it isn't. And that's been the default for so many years. It can't be, therefore it isn't. Imagine if what Mr. Grush is saying is true. Think about the implications of that. And imagine if, as I've just intimated to you, some of these objects are not capable of being moved because they're too bloody big.
I mean, that's pretty astonishing. Have you said that before?
No. No. You're the first. See, I always save something for you, Jay.
Always save me a little something. No, seriously though, Ross, that's nuts. So you were told by someone, a trusted source, I imagine, that
multiple
that there
and
is.
And the thing that amuses me is There is now, I have noticed, emerging on social media a plethora of tweet bots that I've never seen before. And they're running this constant line, this constant nagging line. Oh, where's the evidence? And you know what? I don't give a fuck what they say, because what they say is irrelevant. Because if we can get those questions asked in the Congress, this is the moment. You know, we actually have a unique moment in history where these moments come possibly once every 50, 60 years. The last one we had was, I think, sometime in the 1960s. And this is the next one. And we have an opportunity to actually get questions asked if congressmen, congressional representatives and senators show some steel. And, you know, we're not there yet. I actually suspect it might take a bit longer than the next few weeks. I know a lot of people are placing their hopes in the hearings that are coming up before the various committees that are looking at this issue. But I suspect it might take a bit longer. I suspect that we might need, for example, the Senate Select Committee for Intelligence to actually start winding up. Because at the moment, there's no notification from anybody on the SSCI that there's going to be oversight in public hearings. And frankly, I'm told that one of the problems for these other committees in the House is, one, they don't know a lot. They're only playing catch up now. A lot of the work's been done in the Senate. And a lot of the work's been done privately in the Senate without the presence of the senators. And it's only now in the last few weeks that people like Senator Marco Rubio have actually started reading the transcripts of the evidence that people like David Grush gave. And that's why there's been this change. And mark my words, you're going to see more senators and more representatives jumping on the stage, because this is now becoming a political issue. Because as they read those transcripts, classified as they are, they're becoming aware that there are very serious people, as even Senator Rubio said, very senior people inside the government with very high security clearances saying quite extraordinary things. And that's what's happening right now. So I think people are just going to have to give it a bit of time. They're going to have to wait and see what happens. I'm cautiously pessimistic by nature, because I've seen how governments obfuscate, mislead, and cover up. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if they were able to engineer a cover up here. But it's getting very, very hard, because whilst the mainstream media is still pretty dopey and not engaged, you cannot ignore the formidable power of social media.
No.
Which, in terms of power, in terms of numbers, sheer numbers, yeah, is much more attractive to politicians than legacy newspapers and legacy TV networks. You know, a major newspaper, even in America these days, might get, I don't know, 400,000 or 500,000 readers. A TV network, if it's lucky, might get 400,000 or 500,000 viewers. But a social media tweet, you know, a person posting on Facebook, a video on YouTube, you can get millions of people engaging with that. And what I detect is there's a groundswell happening right now. I mean, one of the reasons I'm so tired is because my inbox is just exploding with people with me. They're pleading with me to investigate stuff. And I don't have the resources, frankly. I'd love to be able to. I'd love for a TV network to actually find the guts to actually start funding serious investigative journalism into the phenomenon. But there's such a lack of engagement, and I'm not sure what's going to happen. I do think, though, that the legislation that's already in power, already enacted, but particularly the legislation that both Senator Gillibrand and Representative Gallagher have put, is just extraordinary. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, where on earth would you ever, in the period since 2017, I would have thought it was unthinkable for a piece of legislation, even a proposed amendment, to have a reference to non-Earth tech. or exotic UAP material. It's amazing. I mean, it's incredible. And the reason why they're doing this, Jay, is because they know something. Because as, again, Senator, if people just listened, as Senator Rubio said in the interview that he did with News Nation, he actually admitted that there's been evidence given now secretly by witnesses for 2 years. This has been going on for 2 years.
I know, and I think the skeptics use that as ammunition by saying, oh, 2 years, and they still haven't managed to come up with anything, so I guess there's not really all that much to it, is there?
I don't understand that argument. What's their point?
I think the point that they're putting forward is that this whole thing's basically just been bolstered by a couple of fanatical people in the government who believe in UFOs, and they've convinced senators and congressmen to change legislation to reflect that. You know, that's at least the interpretation I'm seeing from a lot of the hardcore skeptics, is that, oh, you know, these people are just being, they're just being influenced by these you know, these radical believers within government.
You know, it's really funny. I actually think it's time to engage with people who call themselves skeptics, but who in fact do not behave with objective rigor.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to name them, but basically there are a number of people who purport to be skeptics, i.e. people doing what we should all be doing, which is weighing the scientific evidence, looking at the evidence and making an assessment. In this case, it's entirely appropriate to be skeptical about what Mr. Grush is saying. I completely agree. Absolutely. But you also need to temper that skepticism with the fact that politically, it would not have got the weight of the support that it's got now from people on both sides of the House. Democrats and Republicans are now saying they want an investigation into the allegations that there are retrieved craft, retrieved non-Earth tech. It's amazing. You know, when I first started out researching this about 5 years ago, if anybody had told me that the Congress would ever even be putting in a draft amendment proposed legislation like that, I would have laughed. And I think we have to remind ourselves how far we've come, because we've come an enormous way.
Oh, I absolutely agree, Ross. I mean, you know, I've basically been in the field for about the same amount of time as you, and you've been charging through this subject over the years. I mean, my God, absorbing information, talking to extremely sensitive sources. You've had a level of access and insight that very few people have managed to obtain. And I'd love to know just how it's impacted you on a personal level. I mean, how do you look at the world? How do you look at the world?
I'm actually very optimistic, because if what people like David Grush is saying is true, we have huge reasons to be incredibly positive about the future of this planet. Because, you know, one of the great issues that we're confronting at the moment is the appalling effect of fossil fuels, not just on our climate, but also on the political situation. I mean, you know, we've had so many wars around and in and around the Middle East. Imagine if we could just pull up the rug and leave them all to shoot at each other and, you know, ignore them for the rest of our lives, because we don't have to have their oil anymore. Imagine if all of a sudden the Middle East stopped being relevant. Now, I know there'd be a lot of fuel companies, oil companies, that would be very worried about that. And that might be one of the reasons why this is being allegedly suppressed. You know, the simple fact is that there's so much reason to be positive, because, I mean, let's work back through it. We know, because even the Pentagon is now begrudgingly admitting it, that there is a phenomenon, an apparent, some people say, technology, which is manifesting itself in the form of apparent craft, which is doing apparently impossible things. You know, the five observables, you know, instantaneous velocity and sort of instantaneous maneuvers, incredible speeds, transmedium travel, stealth, and the big one of all, of course, is anti-gravity or positive lift. I mean, these, whatever these are, they're manifesting a capacity to propel themselves, not using the technologies that we apparently use, you know, propellers or rockets or some kind of thrust that essentially pushes back. Whatever it is, it's a technology beyond our ken. And it's there. It's real. And the interesting thing is, if we do have these craft, if what Mr. Grush and others are alleging is true, that's technology that could be harnessed for the benefit of all humankind. And the thing that I find disturbing is the allegation is often made, not just by Mr. Grush to me, but by others, that this technology is being improperly withheld. It's being kept from the knowledge of humanity for reasons that cannot be explained, possibly the best explanation being that they're trying to use it to harness weaponry or technology that can give the United States and indeed Russia and China, who are apparently also fighting for the same technology, a strategic advantage against each other. But, you know, if this technology exists and the Congress is taking it seriously enough to actually pass legislation compelling disclosure of any such evidence, if technology like this exists, it's groundbreaking. It's revolutionary. It would be paradigm changing. It would be a new revolution for humanity, a new industrial revolution. We would have energy systems and technology systems that could change the world. So how am I? I'm optimistic, because if this can be forced into the open, if it's true, then it could change the world. It could remove the reasons for a lot of wars. And maybe it might start us thinking about of ourselves as humans rather than different nationalities.
Yeah, do you think, do you think we've already maybe made that kind of success? Even outside of reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology, I would imagine that's probably quite a challenge. But in terms of just our own progression through energy generation and propulsion, back in the 1950s, it was basically the consensus of physicists that gravity generation was going to be the next thing. And then it all went silent. And if you do your due diligence, which I'm sure you've done as well, you can see that people just seem to disappear off the grid or labs get raided. And around the 1950s, 60s period, there was a genuine, what looked like cover-up of gravity research and study. So is it possible that alongside the existence of non-human intelligences, this is also being used as a smokescreen for platforms that have already been developed that are using field propulsion, electrogravitics, things like that?
Is it possible? Of course it's possible.
I mean, do you think it's happening?
Is it probable? Is it probable? Again, there are two schools of thought. I mean, I had a conversation the other day with somebody who was witness to what they say were American personnel on a Air Force base in the continental United States, apparently working on a hovering large black triangular craft that was seen to deploy from the base in a almost instantaneous velocity way and to then instantaneously reappear not too long later. And that witness said to me that they were left in no doubt at all that what they'd seen was American personnel testing technology. I have to balance that with the fact that I have no corroboration of that. I have no way of testing the veracity of that person's claims. I have to also balance that with the fact that there are people who have said publicly, who are sympathetic to the notion of transparency, that the United States, whilst it is in possession of these craft, hasn't been able to do much with them at all. It hasn't been able to achieve much in the way of reverse engineering. So, frankly, I don't know what to believe. I would like to believe, I mean, I sincerely hope that the United States has made the breakthroughs that we all hope they've made. I mean, wouldn't it be great if there are stealth craft with the capabilities of the Tic Tac? I mean, you could literally destroy your enemies instantaneously. I mean, a jet fighter, an F-22, you know, the top of the line fighter, would be nothing against a Tic Tac that's capable of, you know, hundreds of thousands of kilometers an hour velocity of instantaneous right angle turns. I mean, transition from sea to air to orbit. I mean, the technology that is represented by these theoretical possibilities is enormous. If it's true, it's amazing. I don't know what to think. I mean, I've done a show on my own vodcast, the Need to Know show, where we've talked about a British Special Forces soldier called John Chapman, who cheerfully admitted to me that he was in combat just outside Kyiv in April last year at the very beginning of the war, where he and I think seven other Special Forces soldiers from all over the world, including SEALs, witnessed a craft come out of nowhere over their heads during literally the middle of a firefight. And whilst they're literally being artillery shelled and mortared, they're looking up and they can see these three lights from which a craft just appears. It blinks into existence, and it's hovering over their heads, and it appears to be reconnoitering, you know, doing a reconnaissance on the battlefield with particular interest of the Russian side. So I hope, like hell, it's American technology. I hope that we've developed technology which would, in the event of a confrontation, make a nuclear exchange impossible, because we'd be able to move so quickly we could neutralize any such threat. Wouldn't it be great if such a weapon existed? But wouldn't it be even greater if, rather than them being used as weapons, these technologies could be deployed for peaceful coexistence on the planet?
Well, that's the sad one for me, Ross. Is like, you know, it's an inescapable truth that we do live in a culture and a society that is in conflict, and there is national security measures that have to be taken, and I begrudgingly admit that. But it really, you know, it does break my heart a little bit to think that if we have these capabilities, why are we not just exploring the outer reaches of space with this? Why can't we just use these technologies in a way that can bring stability to the world, that can end poverty, that can end energy requirements? You know, it's greed, and it's ego and territorialism, and it's the signs of an immature species. Maybe we don't deserve these things yet.
Yeah, maybe we're not ready. You know, have you ever thought about that? Maybe the judgment's been made that we're not ready. Or maybe the whole thing is just a big disinformation operation by multiple people in the American intelligence community to deceive people like me that there is this incredible capacity, and that you know, countries like Russia and China shouldn't screw around with America because they've got these secrets up their sleeve. I mean, maybe it is some huge disinformation program. I doubt it very much, but I think we still have to hold that possibility in our heads.
Give their adversaries the perception that, hey, look, you don't fuck with us because we have something that you do not have. But then again, I mean, you know, we've heard all sorts of statements that the Chinese have had their own crashes, the Russians have had their own crashes. How do we know? I mean, I remember a while back, in fact, it was almost 2 years ago, maybe a little bit further on, where we were talking, and you said about there was, I believe, two senior U.S. officials who told you about a program in the Ural Mountain Range in Russia, right? I don't know if you've seen anything else come from that, but these claims have been made, right?
Yeah, I'm very confident that there is a Russian reverse engineering program underway. At least I'm confident to the extent that, as a journalist, I'm reliant on sources who've told me things, who say that there is a Russian reverse engineering program underway and that they've retrieved craft. And as David Grush said in the interview with me, he talked about a Cold War, that there's been a secret Cold War going on for many decades.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a thing that amazes me about this is, I'm probably a scratchy record on this, is we're dealing with a person who has been at the very highest levels of U.S. intelligence, you know, who, as I've said in many interviews, has been responsible for helping draft the daily intelligence briefings for the president, and then has actually personally hand-delivered those briefings to the West Wing of the White House. David Grush is cleared for over 2,000 special access programs with his top secret SCI clearance. I mean, he's a golden boy inside the defense community. And I can tell you that when I started checking him out to verify his bona fides, what really impressed me were the number of people who, knowing what David was doing, were incredibly supportive. And this is the other reason I have for optimism. I think we all do tend to perceive the intelligence community as dark and evil, and you know that they're bad people. But you know, they love their children too. They love their families. They want a stable life. They're good people in the main, and they're concerned about the same things that we're all concerned about. At the moment, the US is weighed down by the strategic threats of Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and others. But, you know, one of the things that really excited me was when I was sort of knocking on people's doors and basically saying, look, what can you tell me about David Grush? You know, is he a good man? What do you think of these claims? Not one of them. I couldn't find anybody who was prepared to pour shit on the guy. You know, he's very, very highly spoken of. And, you know, he's made a strategic decision to essentially put his career on the line and come forward. And it's funny because the double standard that exists, I find it appalling that, you know, we went to war in Iraq back in 2002, 2003, after the 9/11 tragedy, on the false premise that there was some weapon of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had in the desert. And what was that sourced to? You know, we had endless numbers of media, including myself, by the way, lining up to believe credulously American and, in my country, Australian and British assurances that there was hard intelligence to verify that there were weapons of mass destruction hidden in the Iraqi desert, and that we needed to go to war to stop this evil and confront this totalitarian dictatorship. And it all turned out to be nonsense. And we got sucked into a $2+ trillion conflict that cost tens of thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands of lives. And that was all based on unverified source intelligence. Here we have a guy who's got commendations, who has incredible performance reviews from his own government, spoken of very, very highly right up until the moment where he left the Defense Department in April this year. And he walks out and he says, I am a former member of the UAP task force that did the investigations into the phenomenon inside the Pentagon at the behest of the Congress. And I'm telling you there's a cover-up. I'm telling you that I've suffered reprisals and harassment because of my efforts to get to the truth. And I have spoken to multiple sources who verify that there is a legacy crash retrieval program and that there's a reverse engineering program underway. And it's been going for decades. And the US government is lying not only to you, the American people, but also to the Congress, and that's the most serious sin of all. And that's why Congress is so annoyed, because yes, it does take a while for them to wind up and to develop indignation about what they understand. And one of the issues that people need to understand is that a lot of the evidence that's been given to date, including Grush's, wasn't given in the presence of senators. It was actually given in the presence of staffers and senior counsel. And then transcripts have been done. And this has taken months of work because in Grush's case, I think it was 11 hours of testimony all told. And it's really only now in the session that senators and representatives are starting to realize, holy hell, this is a story. And so that, to that extent, my friend, I'm kind of optimistic. I am genuinely optimistic that, yes, there is a pushback. There's a determined pushback. There's also a very, very solid intelligence community spin campaign running on social media. I wouldn't be surprised at all if a lot of the Twitter bots that are attacking Grush, and indeed occasionally myself, are initiated by the intelligence community. Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I've got no way of proving it. But there's a consistency, there's a line to the way they run their attacks, none of which are valid. And ultimately, what are they frightened of? Here's an opportunity to definitively resolve this issue once and for all. I mean, if you were the Defense Department and you've been vexed by this nagging complaint from whack job conspiracy theorists for years that there's a retrieved flying saucer sitting in a cave somewhere in Area 51 or somewhere like that, wouldn't you want to put this to bed immediately and just prove definitively once and for all that this is just a crazy conspiracy theory? That's what fascinates me. I mean, it's not hard. You could easily resolve this once and for all with really serious testimony before the Congress, where witnesses are properly deposed, where Mr. Grush gets the opportunity to put the witnesses that he'd like to see come forward. And by the way, it's not just Mr. Grush's witnesses. There are people who've given evidence, I understand, that he doesn't know about. There's plenty of people who've come forward on their own bat. And by the way, even Dr. Stephen Greer's organization has come forward with some witnesses of credibility.
Yeah.
Not every witness that he's put forward can be dismissed. I'm reliably assured that some of the more interesting witnesses with direct evidence of the legacy program have come from Mr. Greer's organization. That's not to verify that a lot of what Mr. Greer says in other quarters is able to be held up and verified, but I'm told that there's some pretty impressive evidence that's been given in the Congress. And this is what has actioned the Congress to start doing something about it.
You still talk to David Grush?
Yeah. I talked to him today. Yeah.
How's he feeling about, you know, the overall reception to his statements publicly?
I think he's like me, a bit frustrated and annoyed that the mainstream media is showing a lack of engagement and bewildered, to be honest. I mean, it is just shocking. I mean, there is going to come a day, believe it or not, where the mainstream media is just going to have to do a mea culpa.
Mm.
You know, I mean, there were apologias from the New York Times and the Washington Post for their credulous reporting of weapons of mass destruction in the Iraqi desert, where they excessively believed what their intelligence community sources told them. And I think what's happening now is exactly the same thing. You know, they're swallowing the spin from their friends in the intelligence community. And it's better when you sit over a cocktail in the W Hotel somewhere in Washington, D.C. to believe what your friendly IC community source is telling you. And, you know, just leave that Grush stuff alone. I wouldn't go there, mate. You know, it's not really a story. You know, you don't want to embarrass yourself. And this is how it's been run for much of the last 70 years. I mean, we know from ever since the Robertson panel at the beginning of the 1950s that a deliberate, intentional decision was made to essentially lie and mislead the American public. There was a deliberate policy of disinformation set up to try to discourage the public from taking an interest in UAPs. And it worked. And the hilarious thing is it's a taboo and a stigma that still exists today. But I can tell you the legislation, you know, the kind of legislation that's being put up by Mr. Gallagher and Senator Gillibrand, you know, it's momentous. I mean, I really am shocked to read lines referring to non-Earth technology in these articles reporting on this proposed legislation. You know, the Congress has suddenly got a bit between its teeth and it's determined to get to the truth. And it's probably going to take a bit longer than people expect. And just to answer your question about what Mr. Grush feels, I obviously can't speak for David, but, you know, aside from the impatience with the failures of the media, the mainstream media, What I do know is that he's very patiently waiting for the opportunity to give evidence and welcoming the opportunity to be rigorously cross-examined and hoping like hell that corroborative witnesses can be called who can verify a lot of what he says and a lot of what other people have said as well, because it's not just David Grush. I think the debunker skeptic community has been caught napping a little bit because I don't think they realized just how much work has been being done by the Congress. It's been doing its work. It's been taking evidence now for 2 years, as Senator Rubio admitted. And as Senator Rubio admitted, there are first-hand witnesses to the legacy program with high security classifications who have come forward to testify. So at least inside the secret skiffs of the Congress, it's game over. The big issue now is, will the public get told what the Congress is being told? And a lot of people are going, oh, you know, why are you so pessimistic? And I'm pessimistic because I'm a political realist. I'm a pragmatist. I can see what happens in politics. I've seen investigations shut down before. I've covered countless stories where there's allegations of appalling, egregious government behavior or criminality. And it's quietly swept under a carpet because it's not convenient for the establishment to have this story out. And, you know, normally what happens is the judge that presides in the investigation in my country is given a better job, or say the barristers that have presided get given judgeships, and, you know, everybody gets looked after. And, you know, it's how governments behave. And in America, I'm sure it's the same. There's a system of political patronage. People are told, you know, if you keep your nose clean and soft pedal on this, you know, just give the public a little bit of noise, make them happy a little bit, but we don't want to take this too seriously because we don't want to reveal this incredibly important technology for US national security. But fundamentally at the heart of this, and let's move to an issue that I think is interesting, is does revealing the existence, if this is true, of a non-human intelligence lead inevitably to the disclosure of non-human technology having been recovered, or the forced disclosure of what that technology is? I think most people would be prepared to accept that, yes, okay, you know, if Joe Biden stood up and said, as the president, I'm telling you here today, we have lied to the American public now for 70, 80 years, and we apologize for that, but it was done for a very good reason, primarily during the Cold War. But the reasons for not revealing it don't really stand anymore now. We can tell you that there is a non-human intelligence that's been engaging with this planet for a very, very long time. And yes, we have recovered certain things, but we're not going to tell you about that because for the exact same reasons that we didn't tell you the instructions for how to build a nuclear bomb after the Manhattan Project, we can't reveal the technologies that are behind all of this. But suffice to say, in due course, when we've been able to develop them with a massive program that we're going to announce, where we use scientists from all over the world to collaborate and try and harness these technologies for the public good, yes, this is an opportunity for a president to show huge leadership. I mean, just imagine if that was the case. If it is true what Grush is saying, imagine if a president came out and actually said something like that. It would be a turning point.
What do you think it would take for the public and the wider media to really give a shit about this? Because, I mean, we agree, and I think most people listening would agree, that the statements made have been incredible, that the movements made in terms of congressional and Senate interest have been incredible. But we're already interested in the subject, so for us it's kind of further validation. But do we need photos of the vehicles they have? Do they need to roll one out? I mean, what do you think it's going to take for people to actually wake up and go, oh my God, this is real. This is something that they've actually got.
Again, I'm optimistic because I think I know some of the things that are coming. And I think that the public may be pleasantly surprised to see certain former senior, very public officials coming forward, admitting that they believe there is truth to these allegations and calling for a proper congressional inquiry. I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people, for example, don't understand in great historical moments where there's been kind of an unfolding scandal in government, and the one I use often is Watergate. Watergate didn't happen in a day. You know, when Woodward and Bernstein ran their story in the Washington Post, that brilliant series of investigative stories, they took place over months. And for much of the first few months, they were largely ignored, you know, and they were running these obscure stories, and they were largely being ignored by a lot of the other media. And frankly, the interesting thing was a lot of the turning point was when the Congress started engaging with the issue, when it started holding its own inquiries, and when it started making its own feelers out to witnesses to test the allegations. And when they started realizing, oh my goodness, this is true, the president really did order a burglary of the Democratic National Committee. Oh my God, he's had a secret fund called CREEP, the Committee to Re-elect the President. I mean, it's just almost ridiculous what was going on in the 1970s with the Richard Nixon government. And it took a long time. And in this case, I mean, David Grush has only been public knowledge now for a month, you know, 4 weeks. And we haven't even had the first opportunity to cross-examine the relevant public officials, the Scott Brays, the Ron Moultries, USDI, you know, the Office of the Undersecretary for Defense Intelligence that Lou Elizondo is personally accused of being principally responsible for the cover-up, and Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, the current boss of ARO, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. I mean, David Grush, in his interview with me, which went to air, he made some astonishing criticisms of Sean Kirkpatrick. He made it clear that he's briefed Sean Kirkpatrick on certain things. And so I think it's open for the Congress, if there is going to be a hearing, to call Dr. Kirkpatrick and ask him, have you intentionally misled the Congress in any way? Are you aware of things that you're withholding? You know, tell us about the conversation you had with Mr. Grush. What action did you take as a result of what he told you? I mean, this is a man who's clearly ambitious. He obviously wants to do well inside the national security establishment, and he's obviously intelligent. If he knows what side his bread is buttered on, he knows that, you know, if Mr. Grush is telling the truth, the game is up and the opportunity is there for him to be on the right side of history. Because one thing that it's interesting, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office doesn't know is who has given evidence to the Congress. It also doesn't know yet, because it hasn't asked, who did the Intelligence Community Inspector General speak to? And our friends Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp did a very good episode of Coast to Coast just recently, where they talked about the fact that Dr. Kirkpatrick has access, because of an edict that's been issued for ARO's powers, to essentially go anywhere and ask anything. He's got all domain access, basically, to secure access to any special access program he wants to. So if he proactively requests, he can find. And why isn't he doing that? And I think the Congress is going to be asking him those questions. Certainly, a lot of the staffers and representatives and senators that I'm aware of are very, very keen to see these questions put. And I think there's been a turning point. I think there's the beginning of a realization that, you know, here we are 4 weeks in. Normally, with a crazy, wacky story like David Grush's, there's a reason given to disbelieve it very, very quickly, and the witness quietly fades away into history and is never seen again. He's still there, and he's still saying, hey, guys, I'm here. I want to give evidence. I'm ready. When are you going to call me? Guys, I'm here. I'm ready. That's the difference. And I can tell you, I know, because I was talking to somebody just earlier on today, they are determined to make sure he gets a hearing.
And you were told, I believe, that the president's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, may have been involved in this issue to a certain degree. Is there anything you can say about that?
It's an allegation that's been put to me. I can't go into a lot of detail about it, but Jake Sullivan attended a meeting where the issue of crash retrievals and reverse engineering programs was discussed.
Right, okay. But not necessarily directly implicated in the involvement of those programs.
No, I mean, he was briefed into the existence of those programs and told about their existence and given a detailed account of what actually is going on.
Right.
And I suppose the significance of that is that my understanding is that the president can no longer disclaim any knowledge because his national security advisor is clearly briefed. I'd like to see, I mean, again, why is it that when Karine Jean-Pierre at the White House press secretary was asked just recently by one of the journalists in the White House press room, You know, what's the truth of all these claims about retrieved alien spacecraft? You know, what's all these claims about reverse engineering programs and secret UFO programs? What did she do? She just buckpassed it, Jay. She flicked it across and said, "You'll have to ask the Pentagon."
Yeah, well, she won't even give an honest answer.
I just groaned when I saw that because I thought, holy Moses, these are meant to be the elite of the US media. Are you really going to allow yourself to be constrained so heavily? Why not follow up and say, actually, Madam Press Secretary, we're asking the president. We want to know what the president knows. We don't want to know what the Pentagon knows. Does the president know about this? Why is it so hard?
Yeah, but mate, they did that, not with UFOs, but with, you know, Joe Biden and his crackhead son, and she just gave the same response each time. I'm not going to say anything.
This is
a complete shill administration. Like, they're not going to give any sort of real answers on something as profound as UFOs if they can't even tell us the truth about corrupt deals between Joe Biden and his son. I mean, it's a joke.
Well, again, there's a friend of mine from Australia, Miranda Devine, who's written an excellent book about Hunter Biden's laptop.
Uh-huh.
And she was roundly declaimed as a right-wing conspiracy theorist yours for running the story that she did. And I noticed that very quietly Hunter Biden pleaded guilty to tax and gun felony charges just the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth is the media not admitting its mistake?
It's a funny thing that you tell the truth these days and you get labeled as a right-wing conspiracy theorist. It's a very odd phenomenon.
Well, it's funny. I always thought you were a lefty, Jay. I didn't realize you were a right-winger.
Well, yeah, exactly. I've always considered myself liberal lefty. And the more I'm kind of putting my ideas out there, people are calling me a right-winger. It's very surprising.
But, you know, I think just to echo that point, the one thing that I thought was amazing was how there was a letter that was published in newspapers by a whole series of former and serving government officials who said that the Hunter Biden laptop stuff was BS, and it was done at the time of the election. And they've now been forced to admit that there is validity to the claims.
Yeah.
And what's going on? I mean, why didn't the media ask some hard questions about that? And why were people like my friend and colleague Miranda Devine, who asked the right questions, why were they marginalized? I've got another colleague, for example, called Sherry Markson here in Australia, who works for the Murdoch Press, which in some quarters in Australia is enough to get you quartered and hanged. But she quite rightly did a book, which exposed the really strong evidence to suggest that there were alternative explanations to the wet market explanation for the origins of the COVID-19 virus, and the suggestions that there was collaboration between the National Health Institute of the United States and the Wuhan lab, and that was the Wuhan COVID-19 virus a result of some gain of function experiment that went wrong.
Yes.
And I mean, interestingly enough, we've now had at least a majority of intelligence services inside the US government admit that they do think there is some legitimacy to that theory. And I think what's happening is the media in America don't realize that a lot of intelligence analysis in America is politicized. And none is more politicized than the issue of UAPs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been a consistent, I mean, I can remember being in the room with very senior military or intelligence officials and they'd just laugh at UAPs. The standard stock response was just to giggle when somebody asked about a UFO sighting or an anomalous sighting of some object on a radar or a TV video. And you know, it would be given the X-Files music in the background treatment, and there'd be images of little green men and flying saucers shown in the background graphic behind the newsreader. And that's been the mantra, that's been the stigma and the taboo that's been applied to this subject for much of the last 70, 80 years. And I don't think that's appropriate anymore, not when you've got the Congress passing incredible legislation, which basically would give holders of non-Earth origin or exotic UAP material 6 months to make it available to ARRO. Wow, what does Congress know? And why aren't journalists in the mainstream newspapers and television networks going, gee, there's a story here? And why aren't the editors in charge of the investigative teams on those networks and newspapers saying, guys, I want to know, what's the truth here? And it's going to happen. It will happen. I mean, it, just like in the old Watergate days, it took a while. And all of a sudden, you will see a momentum that even the president can't stop. And even if there are gatekeepers, even those gatekeepers to the big secret can't stop. And then all hell will break loose, which is why, frankly, if somebody was in charge and showing true leadership right now, you would expect that there would be a considered plan being put in place to make some kind of controlled disclosure, as there clearly was prior to the 2016 election when Hillary Clinton was taking on Donald Trump. Mm. You know, it's absolutely clear, and I write about this in my book, In Plain Sight, how, you know, there are a whole bunch of leaked emails which showed that there were negotiations going on between John Podesta, General Neil McCausland, General Michael Carey, and Robert Weiss from Lockheed Skunk Works.
Yep.
And there was clearly a discussion being had about some kind of controlled disclosure anticipated to be made after Hillary Clinton became president.
Have you noticed that all of those have now vanished from WikiLeaks?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They've all got a bad gateway 404 type of error.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. I put links to all of those in the index in my book. And it's funny, when I was doing the book, I had to fight with HarperCollins to get an index, because most publishers don't like spending money on an index. It's just extra money, extra pages. But I said, it's really important for the readers to see the evidence that we've got to support what we're saying in the book. And that's why I footnoted it extensively. And I was really shocked when I got to those references in the WikiLeaks emails, which, for people who are listening who maybe don't know the story, the Russian GRU essentially broke into the Democratic National Committee and stole a whole lot of emails, including emails to and from John Podesta, who was working at a very senior level with Hillary Clinton. And he's a former advisor to both Obama and Bill Clinton. And it was quite clear in those leaked emails that were leaked on WikiLeaks, which have now mysteriously disappeared from the WikiLeaks site, that there were ongoing negotiations and discussions between two former very, very senior US Air Force generals, John Podesta and the boss of a very big aerospace company, Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, discussing disclosure. And, you know, there's a whole lot of questions here. You know, what made those emails disappear from the WikiLeaks site? Why? Why are those specific emails being taken down, the ones relating to UAPs? I mean, it's glaringly obvious that someone or something's been done to basically intervene to make sure that the public can't corroborate. I mean, they can find it if they read my book. Everybody, buy my book.
Yeah, no, they are out there. They are still out there. I mean, you know, people, thankfully, within the research community have made sure that copies of those emails have been saved. But yeah, for anyone listening who hasn't checked that out before, at least for now, WikiLeaks is not providing us with those emails. Every time you click on each one of them, they're still there. You can still see them in the directory. You type in, you know, Tom DeLong, John Podesta, UFO disclosure, all of these emails come up. But I tried every single one. Every single one of them goes to bad gateway 404 error, you know, missing, will update soon. Maybe they'll update it soon, but for the time being, they're all gone. And I did do it, you know, kind of control by just checking other more prosaic leaks from different things, and they were fine. So it is interesting.
Have you tried the Internet Archive?
No, I haven't, but I imagine you can probably still get hold of it via the Internet Archive.
Yeah, I'd try the Wayback Machine or the Internet Archive, whatever it's called these days.
Yeah, give that a go and see if it works. What was said to you, because you mentioned this recently, it's a bit of a weird one, about an attempt from a major aerospace company to sell a non-human vehicle to another company. Is that right?
Yeah, I really can't say much more than what I've said. But yeah, I mean, I'm told that there has been efforts by a major aerospace company to divest itself of a craft. Again, I can't prove that definitively.
You trust the source.
I'm only ever as good as the sources that provide me information.
Yeah.
But I've heard it from more than one person independently of each other. And the suggestion is that there was an offer made to a company, and I know the name of that company. I know the principals in that company who were approached to purchase, buy a craft.
But you can't name the company.
No.
No. Well, this is the thing, man. Like, you know, we've talked about this and you've talked about this. If these retrieval and reverse engineering programs fall under the control of private aerospace, and if they're utilizing, for example, private military contractors to retrieve this stuff, you know, this would make an official investigation from within the government extremely challenging. How do you think they're going to get around something like that? I mean, at least from your perspective, from what you've been told, is any of this really in the reservation of government, or is it just so far outside of it that audits and probes and investigations are going to find it quite challenging to get this stuff?
Well, the new, what we need to look at is the actual legislation. And in the legislation that the US Senate Select Committee on Intelligence has unanimously approved, like it's not just Kirsten Gillibrand, mark my words, it's a unanimous piece of legislation. So it's going to pass the House. And these are going into the fiscal year 2024 Intelligence Authorization Act legislation. It would, quote, require any person currently or formerly under contract with the federal government that has in their possession material or information provided by or derived from the federal government relating to unidentified anomalous phenomena that formally or currently is protected by any form of special access or restricted access to notify ARRO, the Pentagon's UFO office, within 60 days of enactment, and to provide within 180 days, that's 6 months, quote, a comprehensive list of all non-Earth origin or exotic unidentified anomalous phenomena material possessed, and to make it available to the ARRO director for assessment, analysis, and inspection. So essentially, in order for the relevant aerospace companies, some of which I have their names in my head, who I am told are holding this technology, they have to either currently or formally have been under contract with the federal government, tick, have in their possession material or information provided by or derived from the federal government, tick, relating to unidentified anomalous phenomena that formally or currently is protected by any form of special access or restricted access, tick. I think they fall within it. But there's another category which I've drawn people's attention to as well, which is I've actually also been told that there have been retrievals by private companies using private military contractors with no federal government role at all, that essentially this has been privatized. I don't think they would fall within that definition. You know, the mischievous lawyer attorney in me looks at that law and thinks they've been very careful, but how can they compel a private company to reveal possession of privately retrieved materials? They really can't. On what basis could they have standing? But I'm pretty sure that that legislation would capture a lot of what I'm aware of.
So there are, yeah. So it's not entirely outside of the reservation of government.
No. No, I mean, I think it's going to be very, very hard. And that was what I was told. I was told this was why one particular company was looking to divest itself of at least one of the technologies in its possession.
Trying to wash and its hands clean before.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is provide an opportunity for themselves in the wash up, because they know that there's going to be a public accounting for this. They want to be able to say, look, we haven't just jealously kept this technology for ourselves for the last 70 or 80 years. We've shared it. And look, this company here has one of the craft that we procured, and they've been working on it for this period. So I think it's the spin control thing. I did think it was interesting, by the way. Did you see that advertisement from Lockheed Martin where they deliberately included a UFO?
Like, we've got programs we still can't talk about, something like that, right?
Yeah. It was a piss take. Gee, I think they're going to regret that.
Well, Lockheed's always been a bit cheeky with their messaging, haven't they? They've always been a little bit kind of
wink, wink, nod, nod. And they're a big, bad, ugly defense aerospace contractor, you know. And look, frankly, let's be honest, a lot of the technologies that have helped keep the world safe in the last 50, 60 years have come from Lockheed. So we've got to give them the benefit of the doubt there as well. But I do think it was very telling that when Lockheed Martin was asked, I know by one journalist recently, and I put this in my Twitter feed, when he was asked by one journalist, you know, do you have any retrieved crashed materials that have, you know, UAP material? They just said, ask the Pentagon.
Who said that?
So what's going on here? Why would a private aerospace company, it was a local defense journalist in a newspaper or a television network in their neighborhood. And I posted it on my Twitter feed because I thought it was hilarious. I said, why would a private aerospace company asked a direct question, do you have retrieved alien spacecraft? Let's put it like that. Why would they say, ask the Pentagon? And at what point does that trigger the curiosity of a good investigative editor on a newspaper or a TV network? I mean, that's almost an implicit acknowledgement that they've got something they want to hide. Why would they say, talk to the Pentagon? And I mean, I think part of the problem here, Jay, is that you and I take for granted that we have an understanding of this issue that's been developed over years. It's formidably complicated. You know, if you were to sit down at a bar, I would have loved to have been at that bar where you were trying to explain it to those two guys that you were sitting with talking.
They were both engineers. They were two engineers, and they were a bit skeptical, but they were listening.
No, it's funny because when I sit down and talk to people, the first reaction is always ridicule. You know,
of course,
and people go and.
Really? You're looking into that? What? Really? Really?
Yeah. You know, why would a journalist, serious journalist, take this issue seriously?
Yeah.
And then when you start laying down the evidence to them, especially talking about the fact that, you know, there's no, you know, legislation coming up before the Congress, which would basically seek to, you know, elicit, is there non-Earth origin or exotic UAP material possessed by private companies that's being hidden from the Congress? Wow. Even if it's untrue, it's an amazing moment in the congressional history. It's almost like Congress, you know, if you don't believe this story, it's almost like Congress saying, you know, all companies have to come forward with evidence of fairies, goblins, and any magic wands that they've got in their possession, because that's the way it's been treated. It's been treated with such ridicule and derision. I think what's wrong-footing the debunkers is all of a sudden it's being taken seriously by the Congress. And so you have to say, at what point does the curiosity get twigged? At what point do they go, oh, Congress is taking this seriously. Mm. Why is Congress taking this seriously? And I can tell you, Jay, I mean, it's not hard to develop the sources that I've developed. You know, I'm a journo. I've got training in how to work sources and stuff like that. And I've been able to find people who'll talk to me about it. It's fascinating to me that there is this willful blindness, because I think if the New York Times, if the Washington Post, if CBS, ABC, NBC just started doing even a few stories probing this issue, I think all of a sudden the house of cards would fall.
Mm. Well, that's the thing. It's like it's like those two guys that I met in the pub. I've got, like you probably do, a bit of a PowerPoint presentation in my brain now with people like that, where it's like, okay, basically in 2017, the New York Times, and then you go on from there and you talk about the legislation, you talk about policy changes, and they were sitting there nodding their heads and listening. But then when I kind of concluded with it and was talking about, you know, the National Defense Authorization Act legislation, they were like, but why haven't we heard about this? Like, what
exactly?
Why haven't we heard about it? I was like, I don't know, mate. I don't know. But it's really like, look into it, look it up. Just type on Google UFO.
Mind you, they probably went away and had another beer in another pub and went, Christ, thank God we got away from that crazy guy.
Yeah, they only bought us the one drink. After that, they were quite happy to see us leave.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. I mean, look, I think, you know, there's a thing that the sociologists talk about called ontological shock.
Yeah.
Something that rocks our view of reality. And I think, you know, whether we like it or not, we all have a certain view of our worldview, you know, in our minds, and we don't like things that challenge it. And it's why we're so, even though a lot of us like to think we're very open-minded, it's why we're very quick to resist change. And I think for a lot of people, it's just so confronting. And I have to be, you have to be aware of that. I mean, I routinely talk now to people in the intelligence and defense community who just cannot believe that this issue, in the light of what they know has been made public, they just cannot believe that this issue is not getting momentum. And it's interesting, though, because it is getting momentum. It is getting momentum on shows like yours, on like mine.
You were recently on Russell Brand as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the scale of public response is immense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not happening on the legacy media. And that's because I think, sadly, even though people like to see a conspiracy here, a lot of it, sadly, is legacy media is just woefully underfunded these days because the money is going to the Googles and the Metas. And
it's a dying breed of media coverage, man. The podcast.
I mean, there used to be rivers of gold in the CBS's, ABC's, NBC's, rivers of gold. You know, the advertising revenue was just immense. They could afford investigative teams. I mean, I met a guy called Lowell Bergman once who did the investigation into big tobacco, and he told me that he worked for CBS 60 Minutes on one story for 1 year, and he cracked it. You know, he managed to persuade, what was his name, Jeffrey Legand, I think, who was the whistleblower who blew the whistle on big tobacco and the crimes that it committed. It was just the most incredible story. And, you know, he only was able to do that because of the courageous efforts of his editors to support him to essentially dig for a year, at least a year. And even then, the corporate pressures on the network shut down their ability to do further stories and how the story was told. But the, you know, the simple reality is that there are corporate commercial pressures and budgetary pressures on media organizations now that didn't exist 20 or 30 years ago. And so we still treat the legacy masthead media, the Washington Posts, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Boston Globes, all of those great papers, we treat them with awe and respect, but their ratings are probably less than yours, mate. I mean, getting less readers than you.
Well, this is where I'm at with it. I mean, I'm part of the generation that entered into the information age. I was born with the internet, and the generation below me is just, completely plugged into the matrix in that regard. And I just think that these platforms, although there is still, a level of influence, and there's a certain generational demographic that absolutely tunes into what we would now call legacy media, it's dying, mate. And I don't think it really matters in the long run if they decide they don't want to cover it. Ironically, when they do cover it, they get the best views that they get in decades. You know what I mean? It's quite funny. I mean, yeah. News Nation exploded with the David Grush story.
It has.
Tucker Carlson and Fox News was getting tons of views on all of their UFO coverage.
Absolutely. So,
what's wrong with them?
I think they're fearful of ridicule. They're fearful of stigma. Yeah.
Well.
And also, look, to deploy somebody like me as part of a team to go off and investigate something, it can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that's a big chunk out of the budget of a TV network for the year when, you've only got, say, a 10th or a 20th of what you had 20 years ago.
That's true.
And the simple fact is that, and this is a huge problem, I mean, the Facebooks or the Metas or whatever you call them these days, the Googles, all of these big online media companies or entities, they're not funding investigative journalism. A lot of what they fund is dross. It's shit, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just recycled information. Ironically, a lot of the most interesting stuff on social media is news stories that have been recycled from the mainstream media and repackaged by people and put up on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And, it's really interesting because in Australia, the government's passed legislation that required some degree of compensation from those online companies to actually compensate the legacy media companies for the fact that a lot of their product was being plundered and put up online as secondary content that was generating clickbait for those online media companies. And it's not working. Those legacy media companies are still slowly dying, slowly sinking into the morass as their advertising revenue dwindles and their audience dwindles every year. I mean, I'm quite shocked at how I have two highly intelligent daughters And, you know, one of them's at university. She reads the New York Times. I give her the subscription for free. But she doesn't read the daily newspapers in Australia. She thinks they're crap, and she can't believe that I read newspapers every day or that I listen to radio news or watch TV news. She just thinks that's ridiculous. And the notion of monitoring legacy media and knowing, I mean, I still read newspapers by bylines by the journalists that I respect. And I follow issues in newspapers, basically looking at, you know, the key journalists. And I don't think a lot of people do that anymore. And I think we're losing something as a society because we've lost the funding of media that used to be able to do those kind of digs. I remember when I was in my 20s, just sad to say a long time ago now, I couldn't believe the resources in network television in Australia. I came from a newspaper that was already pretty well funded, but just mind-boggling to see the unlimited amount of money. I remember a very senior executive on a TV program I was working on, he wanted to do a story in a foreign country, and he just basically said to me, hire me a jet. And I went, what? And he gave me a credit card and basically said, go off and hire me a corporate jet. I don't want to stay overnight in that place. Hire me a jet, and I want to be in and out of there. We can stay in Hong Kong on the way back. And so at huge expense, we hired a jet just to tell this great story. It was a rip snorter of a story, but just amazed me, the resources and the money that were dedicated to storytelling. And that's all gone. It's all diminished.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, actually. I've been copying an intelligence community slur online, which is totally untrue, but it's being recycled by the same Twitter bots that keep on saying the same thing. And the canard, the lie, is that I was allegedly sacked from 60 Minutes Australia, and it was because of some story that I did that I supposedly got so badly wrong. And they're wrong on completely both counts. And it's really interesting because clearly some of my criticisms are starting to bite, because all of the criticisms are entirely the same. They're being repeated by the same kind of weird Twitter bots with weird names and then a number after them. And it's very redolent of the era where Prigozhin, Putin's chef, was sending out emails from his own facility in St. Petersburg to try and undermine the Clinton-Trump election back in 2016, 2017, and the or 2015, sorry. And the thing that really amazes me is how social media, which we're relying on now to get our news, is so easily manipulable by intelligence communities and by non-state actors that want to try and manipulate public opinion.
Right. But I mean, just as you said with the Iraq war, it's the same with the legacy media in terms of their influence from the intelligence community. So it's all pervasive.
Completely.
Really. It's all pervasive.
Yeah. But I think it's easier using algorithms in social media. I think that's the frightening thing, is it's possible to automate it now.
Yeah.
And that's what spooks me, is that we're moving into quite a dangerous era where technology is giving governments powers that they don't even realize they have. You know, we've ceded such enormous liberties ever since 9/11 on very spurious grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have warrantless surveillance. The degree of communication surveillance is frightening. And, you know, you've got governments wanting to regulate truth online in my country. You know, they're actually
becoming very Orwellian, isn't it?
It's quite astonishing. And I think what we're losing is the capacity for rigorous analysis. And never before has there been a time where there is a desperate need for rigorous constructive criticism and analysis, where people need to take a contrarian view on stories. You know, I mean, it's all coming out now, you know, post the COVID epidemic, that yes, we did have to respond to COVID, but did we respond properly? And governments all over the world are resisting investigations into whether or not the right decisions were made. You know, did it really make sense to require people to wear masks in airplanes and bars?
No.
you know, did
basically, Ross, all the things that I was going on about and a relatively large population of people online were going on about were labeled as anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorists are now turning around and being validated. And it's...
It's amazing because the media has been largely complicit in the slurs on people that have actually asked those questions. And a lot of them are people who've been quite reputable scientists and doctors who've had their careers destroyed because they've actually asked those questions. And, you know,
how is that a scientific process? Explain to me how trusting the science means that we can suppress and censor certain scientists and hold other ones up onto a platform. That doesn't sound like a scientific process to me.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
But I know, for example, on the UAP subject, I know I've never seen before such a high degree of what's called, you know, argumentum ad hominem, attacking the person rather than the issue. Very few people online are actually doing a constructive analysis of the implications of what Mr. Grush has said, saying, wow, okay, this is a guy of high repute from the top levels of the intelligence community. Impeccable career, absolutely impeccable career, performance reviews to die for. Yes, we've confirmed he worked for the UAP task force. Yes, we've confirmed that he did make an Inspector General complaint. That Inspector General complaint is still ongoing. And if you look at the legislation, by golly, the Inspector General has the power to refer to Congress and make findings. And what was the finding he made? Oh, my goodness. He said it was credible and urgent, what Mr. Grush was saying. And we know that Senator Marco Rubio has confirmed what I've known for a considerable period of time, that there have been other firsthand witnesses who've come forward and corroborated this man's story. So that's the kind of constructive, rigorous analysis that anyone approaching this subject matter scientifically would apply. He's not a first-hand witness in the sense that he saw a flying saucer sitting on blocks in a cave in Area 51. He didn't see the retrievals of craft, but he has the next best thing. He has sworn testimony from people who have. That's called evidence, solid evidence. And guess who's got it? The ICIG, the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, and the Senate in the Congress. This is big. This evidence at some stage is going to come out. And when and if it does, I think there's going to be quite a lot of public reaction. I think at that point, you know, it will just be so indisputable, then there will just be this catastrophic momentum. People will have to respond.
Yeah, there's been a lot of reference of late towards the Five Eyes Alliance in regards to classified study of UFOs, but many people don't actually know what that is. Could you help those listening understand the relevance of the Five Eyes and what do we know about their potential involvement in this issue?
Not a lot of Americans actually know that during the Second World War, General MacArthur, who was the leader of the Allied armies in the Pacific War, was forced to flee the Philippines, and he ended up in Australia and ended up basing himself in Australia for a large part of the war. And what was going on was there was a relationship that began between British code breakers at Bletchley Park, the predecessor of what's now called the GCHQ, and code breakers here in Australia at what was then essentially the Signals Directorate. It was essentially called Signals, but it's now the Australian Signals Directorate. And you've got Canada, New Zealand, Australia, England, and the big brother US all collaborating initially in the Second World War on code breaking to try and break the Japanese ciphers. And one of the biggest achievements was when one of the top Japanese generals was shot down over Indonesia, I think, or might have been Papua New Guinea, and killed. And basically it was because of signals intelligence that was cracked here in Australia. And that developed an espionage relationship, a spying relationship that continued after the Second World War. And basically, in a very grey area, communications surveillance began where, and I've done stories about this over many years, I've collaborated with a British journalist, British Scottish journalist called Duncan Campbell, and we did a big expose about the Echelon communications surveillance system with a lot of help from a lovely guy in New Zealand called Nicky Hager. And what we revealed was essentially there was a thing that was going on with the Five Eyes where New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the Brits and the Americans were collaborating to essentially crack communications, both from satellites. They were intercepting satellite comms and they were actually hacking into fiber optic cables under the ocean and essentially gathering intelligence on potential foreign adversaries. And what that made me realize was that there was a collaborative relationship going on between all of these countries, mine and yours and America and New Zealand and Canada, that's been going on for years, decades. And it's expanded into other areas of the intelligence community. For example, I did a story for public television here in Australia back in the 90s, where I revealed that Australian spies were breaking into embassies, including, for example, the Chinese embassy in Hong Kong before the handover, to give Britain an advantage in negotiations against the Chinese and the Hong Kong handover. And it was very controversial. I got a lot of attacks from my own government at the time for revealing this sensitive secret. And the interesting thing was, even though I know the names of the people who actually did the bugging, the Australian operatives who did the bugging, you know, I knew that, but their bosses didn't. It hadn't even been revealed to the Australian commanders. So these people were doing plausibly deniable work for the Brits.
Wow.
That was being withheld from Australian intelligence bosses. And it was very embarrassing. And it all eventually came out in a Royal Commission of Inquiry here in Australia. And it supposedly led to far-reaching reforms to the intelligence community. But what it made me realize was that there's been collaboration now for years among all of the Five Eyes nations, not only on signals intelligence and bugging and spying, but on a wide range of things. And there's been sharing. And one of the allegations that I noticed a Canadian MP called Larry Maguire made in a letter that was released by George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell a few weeks ago, Larry Maguire alleged that there was a so-called foreign materiel program under the Five Eyes allowance where countries would collaborate in the retrieval of foreign adversary technology. And, you know, for example, if the Russians crashed a MiG somewhere in the African jungle, you know, we'd make sure that we got there first, and it might be the Brits would retrieve it, but it would go to the Americans in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Foreign Technology Division to try and rebuild it and have a look at how it was built. But the allegation's been made by Maguire that there's been a foreign material program collaboration going on with UAPs.
And, yeah, very, very foreign indeed.
Yeah, and so there are whiffs now emerging that there's been collaboration between the Five Eyes nations. And the reason this is significant is because if you're a member of NATO and you're not a member of the Five Eyes, like, say, Germany, Belgium, Holland, France, wouldn't you be pretty pissed if you discovered that there's been retrievals of technology that you've been withheld knowledge of because you're not a member of the club?
Not important enough, not in the boys' network.
Yeah, so I think it's becoming a political issue. So
yeah,
that's why I think that the I think that the first disclosures might actually come from those nations, the nations that are upset and angry that they've been cut out of the whole information knowledge that has been secretly, allegedly held within the Five Eyes Alliance for a large part of the last 80 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you could be right. I mean, you know, the French government was pretty open, at least to a certain degree, about their interest and their involvement in the UFO subject. So it could come from another country that's not part of that network out of a little bit of jealousy and being a bit pissed off that they were left out of the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people don't realize the French government funds a sort of a semi-private, semi-governmental organization called GEPAN, which actually investigates the phenomenon. And they've long since abandoned any pretense that the phenomenon is not real. They acknowledge there's a reality there, that UAP is real. They collect UAP data. And what's more, they share it. You know, they're really open about it to a high degree, much more so than you've ever seen with the Americans, who are being dragged kicking and screaming into disclosure at the moment.
What about the Brits? You know, what about the English? Because we're very quiet. And we've had some Rendlesham, we've had some interesting cases. Have you actually heard any sort of whispers in the background about what the UK is doing in light of their American compadres opening up on this subject?
Look, I've already said publicly that I know that British soldiers, British personnel have been involved in alleged crash retrievals. And so I do believe that somewhere inside the defense and intelligence community in Britain, there are people that are briefed in. But yet again, I think that this is done. I mean, it's funny, actually, one of the lines that I heard from a source was the politicians who end up being the ministers in charge of the defense and intelligence community and the prime minister of the day and the president in America, they're described as temporary employees.
Yes, exactly.
And so the people who do know are often permanent secretaries, heads of intelligence agencies. And there's been this hubristic, arrogant decision made that there is no right to know for the elected political leaders unless there's some good reason for them to know. And allegedly that's been applied with presidents as much as it has with prime ministers. And I'm pretty sure in my country, for example, I don't think my prime minister knows QE about allegations of Australian involvement in the Five Eyes and UAP retrievals, or I don't think it knows that we are still secretly collecting data.
No, but I mean, it makes sense. You know, begrudgingly, I would admit it makes sense. If you're a permanent staffer with this kind of information, you're really going to give it to someone who's eventually going to be outside of that circle, who may just decide to run their mouth later down the line on a late night show.
Yes, they do.
It's too big of a risk.
I mean, one of the things I keep an eye on is politicians all do oral histories. Uh-huh. And a lot of them are put under embargo in the National Library of Australia. And there's a few key politicians I'm keeping an eye on who've since passed on, but their oral histories have long ago been recorded and put into the vaults in the National Library. And I periodically go in there and just have a look to see whether or not they've been declassified yet. But I've still got to wait another few years yet. And I think Britain is heavily involved in this. I mean, there are direct allegations of British personnel being involved in crash retrievals, some of them quite substantial. And yes, there is the Rendlesham case. And of course, I think a lot of people miss the significance of the Condign report, the CONDIGN report, which was uncovered, I think, by Dr. David Clark. He requested the National Archives, the Public Record Office in the UK, declassify this secret UAP inquiry that was done by an arm of British intelligence called, I think, DI55, classic British acronym, DI55. So boring you won't think about it.
We're not as impressive with our acronyms as the Americans are.
But don't forget, it was the Brits that taught the Americans all about espionage. And you know, it was the Brits that helped the Americans set up the CIA. The only problem was one of them was called Kim Philby, and they were completely and utterly penetrated for a long time. But the interesting thing is, I think the Brits know an enormous amount. And I don't know what's going on, but I suspect if these allegations are true, and I always feel I have to preface that by saying I never know 100% for sure that they are, but if these allegations are true, then I think there's some national security reason that has been cited that justifies the non-release or the non-publication of this information. And I'd love to see it tested. It's going to be very interesting to see whether the Congress accepts any argument that it should still be kept secret. Because whilst on the one hand I can see an enormous, indisputable public interest in knowing, if it's true, that we are not alone, you know, wouldn't it be great if a prime minister or a president came out and said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to formally inform you that we are indeed not alone. There is a non-human intelligence that's been engaging with this planet for quite some time. I can imagine that happening, but I'm really doubtful that we're ever going to see concessions about retrieved technology. It's the holy grail. You know, imagine if you know the Russians have got a cave in the Ural Mountains and they're busy beavering away, secretly spending gazillions trying to crack this technology, if that's true, would you willingly or knowingly allow the same kind of public scrutiny to happen? I mean, we know that there were leaks from within the Manhattan Project, which was supposedly the most secret project of its time in the 1940s. And what's his name? Klaus Fuchs leaked the secrets of the atomic weapon to the Soviets. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine there's legitimate concerns about betraying secrets that might give a foreign adversary an advantage.
Absolutely. I don't want to eat up into your evening too much. So just a couple more questions, Ross, and then I'll let you have a lie down, because fuck me, you must be absolutely blown out from all of this. Like, you know,
I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. So oh, it's been a long God. Day. Yeah.
Yeah, you are a soldier, mate. I don't know how you do it. I mean, I bust out a few interviews in a week and I need to lie down on a holiday. So, you know, you're an impressive.
They
you're
are
impressive
tiring.
Guy.
You know, you've got to think carefully, because all the time I've got to think about what I can't say.
Absolutely. It's a delicate dance.
I've got a head full of stuff that I probably shouldn't know. From a multiplicity of sources, and I've got to constantly remind myself why I know certain things.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, just see if there's anything I can glean from you, or if you've been told anything in relation to this. The actual origins, or the nature of the phenomena, how far back it goes into our history. Have you been given any sort of insight from people in your network about the real origin and nature of the phenomena?
Nothing hard. Nothing really detailed, but one source contacted me, and I think it was because of a conversation on your show, actually, where I was talking about some great work done by a guy called Ben Van Kirkwick, who's an Aussie guy who's moved to the US, and he's got a great YouTube channel called Uncharted X. I think the episode I was talking about was when he'd done the first ever micrometer analysis on what is a pre-dynastic, like, you know, really old, possibly 5,000-year-old Egyptian vase sitting in the Cairo Museum. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful object. And it's got handles on it. So we're talking about a civilization that barely just had bronze adzes. You know, they were using bronze metals. So they didn't have a lot of advanced technology. They didn't have machines. As far as we know, they didn't have lathes. And yet the tolerances on that vase were such that it just suggested, you know, begged the suggestion that there was some kind of advanced technology used to craft that vase. A technology that might even defeat us today, because the handles were carved out of the same bit of stone, so it couldn't have been spun on a lathe, and yet the tolerances were exactly the same in the part between the handles where a lathe couldn't have gone, if you understand what I mean. Mm-hmm. And similarly inside, and when they did the laser measurements inside, it was within like a thousandth of an inch. It was incredible.
I saw it myself when I was in Cairo Museum. I've seen the. It's incredible.
And so one of the reasons I'm going to Egypt later this year is because I'm fascinated by the idea that has the full history being told from Egypt and from other civilizations of, you know, how some of these objects were crafted. And what were the technologies that allowed them to develop, you know, these beautiful lumps of granite, incredibly hard stone, supposedly using bronze adzes and polishing mitts with sand on them. to get tolerances to within a micrometer. You know, it's ridiculous.
Oh, mate. I mean, when you go, and I'm going to hopefully try and come on this trip because I really.
Oh, great. Going. Good.
I had JP on the other day for an interview, and we were talking about the first trip to Egypt, which it was just such an incredible experience. So if I can make it around for this one to see you and Nick Kirk, and oh my God, I'd love it. But one thing, when you go to Cairo Museum, and I'm sure they'll still have it, there's this gigantic slab of rose quartz granite, absolutely massive slab, but it's tucked into the corner and you have to literally shuffle your way around this thing in with your back against the wall to see that on one side of this block there is just a razor line straight through this rose quartz granite, like just in straight through, like someone has taken a hot knife through butter. And it's just tucked into the corner, and you have to actually make a considerable amount of effort to squeeze around and see this.
I mean, let's assume that was done sometime, you know, in the thousands of years of the Egyptian civilization.
Yeah,
I mean, that's 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago.
Yeah,
how could they possibly have done that?
How?
Anyway, just to finish the thought that I was explaining.
Yeah.
My source, who said to me, frankly, that, you know, it's quite clear that, you know, there is an explanation for human civilization that is offered by this NHI presence. And the explanation is that they've been here all along and that there are civilizations that have flourished and diminished that we don't know about yet that can explain these kind of technologies that exist in our prehistory. And it fascinates me because Egypt, probably more than any other place in the world, is the location for that. And the suggestion was put to me, to answer the long-winded way I've answered your question, the suggestion was put to me by the person that I was speaking to who'd heard me speaking. Well, of course, you know, of course there's technologies there. I mean, do you think that this was all, you know, really known civilizations? And the suggestion was that there were civilizations before this one. And I find it intensely frustrating because one of the things that I find annoying is there are some popular analyses suggesting that there is, you know, some kind of catastrophe that was visited on the Earth. I think it's 12,500 years ago.
The Younger Dryas cataclysm.
The Younger Dryas. And quite a number of people that I've spoken to in the intelligence community have drawn my attention to the fact that the CIA in the 1960s spent an inordinate amount of money investigating exactly that. And if you go to the CIA library, you know, America's External Intelligence Service, you can actually read some of those documents.
Yeah.
Why was America's supposedly premier intelligence service investigating ancient civilizations? And why did it sponsor investigations into the pyramids and things like that in the 1960s and the 1970s? And a lot of this is public record. And I find it fascinating. And the journo in me doesn't know the answers necessarily. But what I'm interested in is trying to get to the bottom of, you know, why are these mysteries not being answered? You know, why can't we find out more?
Well, there is an interesting correlation, and it's definitely a difficult one for people to digest. And I mean, you just referenced the fact that the intelligence agencies, namely the CIA, were interested in these ancient civilizations. And one of the kind of hallmarks of Egypt and even ancient Greece, but especially Egypt, was the science of consciousness and the Hermetic kind of theological principles. And I think that we've lost a lot of this. We've gained technological sophistication, analytical sophistication, but we've lost that consciousness science, which I think really was a science back in those times. And then you obviously cross-reference that with the fact that the CIA had its remote viewing programs. It was very interested in psychic abilities. So the idea that they wouldn't be looking at these ancient civilizations that seem to have, you know, kind of a keystone interest in what consciousness and higher elements of consciousness represent, it's pretty obvious that they'd be interested in that. And I'll tell you one thing I'll just quickly touch on before we wrap up is that one of the more difficult elements to understand with the UFO issue is the connection it shares to what we could call expressions of higher consciousness. There is a bleed over from the UFO issue into psychic abilities and remote viewing. And there are claims that some of these non-human vehicles rely on some form of brain, computer, or consciousness technology interface, kind of a telepathic connection. Have you been given any insight about that from people in your sources, like in
No,
terms
and
of
I look at,
consciousness?
you know, it's funny. It's funny. I probably should ask that stuff more.
Please
I mean, it's
do.
really only recently I've started reading Jacques Vallée's books, because Jacques's probably been the mentor for a lot of us, talking about the fact that you can't talk about UAPs without talking about consciousness. And I've started taking a lot of what Jacques says far more seriously after conversations that I've had with people suggesting, you know, it's a really good idea to do so. And yeah, I'm still very much in my sort of nascent days having a look at that issue. I do think it's interesting that Tom DeLonge, who has proved in his fictional works to be astonishingly prescient to date about what he predicts might come to pass and is nonfiction, I do think it's interesting that his first novel that he wrote for the Secret Machines series, which I commend to everybody, it describes a secret UFO being flown by an American pilot using a neural brain consciousness interface.
And then
Fascinating.
I believe in that book, the guy actually starts developing some form of psychic abilities that, after flying the vehicle, he suddenly got a bit angry and moved a salt shaker across the
But
table in his mind room.
did you notice in that book, it also talked about how he discovered that he and one of his friends had been selected as children for the program.
So this gets into the Star Kids, NASA, gifted children
And
kind of
just let me
initiatives.
put you up. This is something I haven't been able to investigate, but did you see, I've forgotten who said it. I've got the article somewhere in my database, but essentially somebody came out a few months ago and talked about the fact that there was a guy coming forward who's written a book who says that he was selected as a child for the program, and that he's been working on secret US technology, and that it's all about brain neural interfaces, and he's going to go public soon. I haven't seen this, so much of this stuff that bobs up in the custard, and you never see it just goes away because there's so much happening so fast.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one, so I'll have to do a little bit of
I'll dig it
background
out.
on
No,
it.
I'll
Yeah,
dig it out and send it
dig it
to you.
up. But no, I mean, like, that's been a part of the conversation for, for decades in terms of psychism and these types of abilities being linked to the phenomena. And I mean, our good friend Nick Cook, he started off very nuts and bolts, and now he's on the board of Bigelow Institute for Consciousness Studies. The deeper you probe
I
into this
know.
subject,
He's
it's
gone all woo,
inescapable.
hasn't he?
He's
Dear
gone
old Nick,
all
he's
woo
gone
on
all
us. He's
woo.
gone
You know,
all
he's
woo.
gone
He's
crazy. Total
come
tinfoil
to
hat
my
nutter.
side. He's come to my side of
Well,
the argument. No, but
I
I
mean,
think it's just
ask yourself, Jay, if one of the world's former most eminent aerospace journalists is prepared to risk his reputation by engaging with that subject matter,
absolutely.
you know, it's really interesting. And I think, you know, he's one of the things I love about Nick, and I respect him enormously. He's got a nose for a very good story when he sees one.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's merit to this, and it's worthy of research, and that's a that's a deeper level of the story that I think is going to take a little bit more time to propagate out publicly, but it's inescapable. There is a consciousness link to this subject. Ross, mate, I won't keep you for any longer because you've been very gracious with your time, and my God, you must be bloody exhausted, mate.
I'm all right. It's fun. I mean, I'm interested in the it really helps to be interested in the subject. I mean, I think one of the blessings in life is to do a job that you love. It would be nice occasionally to be doing a job that I actually get paid for, but frankly, I the amount of work I do on this, and I earn absolutely nothing. I laughed the other day. I honked with laughter. I'm not sure whether it was Jason Colavito, that noted debunker, or somebody else, but there was a pejorative WikiLeaks entry that had been entered against me, which basically said that Ross Coulthart's doing all this UFO work
Cashing
because
out.
he wants to be part of, quote, the lucrative UAP lecture circuit. So, Jay, I'll send you my invoice in a few minutes, mate. I was just thinking maybe, I don't know, £1,000 an hour or something might work for you. Is
That's the standard going rate for the UFO subject, isn't it? We're all just
that?
rolling in cash from doing
Yeah,
this, you
we're
know what
all
I mean?
sluts on the UAP lecture
Yeah,
circuit, mate.
that's
You
it,
know,
bro.
Who are these people? They're on drugs. Anyway, yeah. Look, mate, it's a real pleasure to talk to you as usual.
Of course,
I'm actually going to go off now and watch your show with JP.
Oh, it was great. It was great. You know, just he's an awesome guy. And I had a great time in Egypt with him. And he's very good at navigating this subject, again, from the two perspectives. You know, the technical is important, but there is this esoteric philosophical thing. And that's where I like to sit in this subject. I like to just kind of speculate on the philosophy of what this really means and represents. But yeah, man, it's a pleasure to talk to you as always, Ross. Just keep kicking the doors down. Try not to go too insane with this subject, because I certainly feel sometimes that I am on a fine line between losing my mind and gaining insight. So I don't know how you feel, but it can be bloody tiring and a little bit mentally confusing to be operating in this place, and especially for someone like you, because you are getting, you know, insight from people that most are not talking to. And I guess that can be quite a balancing act in the brain and trying to rationalize what you're hearing with what you're seeing in the wider world. So
absolutely,
yeah, I hope you don't go too nuts.
I take the dog for a walk and I do lots of gardening, mate. And I lift lumps of weight over my head and go to the gym. That's how I deal with these things. Yeah,
good for you. And before you leave, is there anything else you can tell us about this gigantic vehicle that's too big to move? What were you told specifically? Come on, just like give me some more details.
I've told you all I'm going to tell you. I'm going to get in trouble.
Damn you, Ross.
Saying what I said. I'm going to get in trouble.
Got me on tenterhooks.
Let me just tell you this. I know exactly where it is.
My goodness. Do you think that's going to come to light?
One day. Yeah. And it's really interesting because it's absolutely gobsmacking that it's being kept as a secret.
Jesus.
Imagine having an object that's so big, it's just not conceivable to move it.
I can't. I can barely even comprehend that.
Yeah. I thought it was bollocks when I heard it too. And most people listening to this will anyway. But, I mean, again, just an allegation, but one that I'm, you know, assured should be taken seriously and hopefully will be being investigated by the Congress. Because again, where did the money come from? What's that money accounted for? The continued security and control of such an object for many decades. Who's paid for that? What programs have paid for that? Has that been disclosed to taxpayers? This is going to be a really fun inquiry. If Congress starts doing its job,